Have you been wanting to start a podcast but not quite sure where to start? If so, I'd love for you to check out my online course called How to Start a Podcast in 24 Hours. Here we'll dive into all of the things you need to get started. Things like how to name your podcast, which microphone to use, how to edit, and lots more. Go to realdavidezell.com to learn more. That's realdavidezell.com to learn more.
Freedom over fame. Freedom over cycle stays the same.
Welcome in, everyone, to How to Ride a Roller Coaster. I'm your host, David Ezell. Here, we'll talk with business owners and founders on what it's like to ride the roller coaster known as entrepreneurship. How to navigate the highs, the lows, as well as tangible tips that you can use right now to kickstart your business or idea. Let's get to it. Welcome to this episode of How to Ride a Roller Coaster. I'm David Ezell, and today I'm joined by Kat Weaver. She's the founder of Power to Pitch. They help entrepreneurs learn how to pitch, present to investors, find grant opportunities so that they can get funded faster. What's going on?
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me, David.
Man, me too. I feel like our paths have kind of crossed here in Dallas, but not totally. So yeah, thank you again for your time. I know that your calendar is super booked these days.
Yeah, and for all the crazy right things, but it's all founder entrepreneur focused. So I'm honored that I get to be fit in with the podcast here. I was originally from Chicago, moved to Dallas just over a year ago, and it's been an awesome ecosystem to be a part of. But we help founders across the country, so it's a lot of fun.
And I totally agree. So I've kind of told that same little intro spiel at Founders Live Dallas for the past while. You know, it just feels like the ecosystem in Dallas is very different. I've heard of some cities where it's kind of closed off and reserved. You know, like it's hard to kind of break in. It's hard to get access to potential co-founders, just to connections, mentors, finance, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it can
money.
Be tough. Yes. And Dallas just feels different. Like every time we have an event, every time I go to a networking event, people say, oh, what are you doing? Oh, let me let you talk to this person. Let me connect you on LinkedIn. You know, it's just so different. And I love the stuff that you're doing. I love how you're just such a connector out here helping to bridge that gap. So again, thank you for everything that you do.
Yeah, it's funny because I was a part of so many different startup ecosystems. And one of the whole reasons that I told my husband that we should move here, even though we've only visited once, was because of that feel and environment. And there was just so many people who were willing to make connections without a what's in it for me. Yeah. I was like, wow, that's super refreshing. There was a ton of different ways to get involved in the ecosystem. And people were just excited to hear about what you're working on and how they can get involved and that they knew someone who knew someone who knew someone. And I think that energy is really, really contagious in entrepreneurship, regardless of if you have a co-founder or not, can still be lonely and tough. So it's really, really refreshing and exciting to be here.
You're right. You know, and it's such a great community to be a part of. Because when you go in, everybody kind of understands, whether they're behind you, ahead of you, whatever the case in their business or their venture, everybody kind of gets it. When it's trying to raise money, when it's trying to close sales, everybody kind of gets it, you know? And I feel like if you're not in that world, you kind of don't. It just feels so different. So you nailed it. You know, it can be a very lonely path to go through. So it's great to just have that community. But did Power to Pitch, did that come from your own struggles of trying to get it out there or doing it wrong when you started? Or where did all of that kind of come from?
So my entire life has been by accident, I would guess. I would say I'm a little type A OCD planner, right? And I wanted to go into medicine in college, end up accidentally creating my first startup because I wanted this product for myself. Everyone wanted it. So I learned how to really tell my story, and I didn't have connections for money. So I won a bunch of pitches, and then FedEx posted my top pitch tips on their YouTube because I had cultivated some pitching skills and won a lot of money doing so, that it turned into my next business. Because I met so many amazing founders who struggled to talk about who they were, what they were building, and what they needed. And it's three simple factors, but it ruined so many opportunities for so many deserving founders. So that was really the whole idea behind Power to Pitch, is helping founders with the foundational education, mostly early stage. And we focus on a ton of female and underrepresented founders, because that group secures 1.6% of venture capital historically, sadly. Yeah. So we really focus our energy towards that in supporting them and helping them get funding faster. But all of this was just, you know, trying to go after serving one problem after another in a way, and falling on my face and stumbling, cartwheeling, you know, along the way. It is absolutely not a linear journey. Even though I sold my company after 6 years, it's like, oh, well, great, you sold a company, moving on. It wasn't for, you know, a $1 billion exit or anything where I'm living on an island. It was enough to get me into this next journey and help me cultivate the mentors that I needed, advisors, the lessons, the grit, the stamina to do the startup world. I never had a corporate job. So in serving founders now, I get how hard it is to be a founder and get to those next stages.
No doubt. So how do you really kind of go about and find the perfect people to work with, those people that you are trying to kind of elevate so that they can build the next great thing?
Yeah, I think I want to start with, a lot of founders think that accelerators are going to solve their problems. And not all are bad, but not all are created equal. Like, a lot of advisors in those programs volunteer their time, which is great. But on the other hand, not all of them have been where you want to go as a startup. And sometimes they're giving you advice, or it's conflicting advice, and then it actually takes you away from running the business. So I urge a lot of founders to actually write down their specific strengths and weaknesses or areas of growth. And you have to find someone in a non-competitive space who's already been there. Because if you have someone who has an opinion about that, it is absolutely not the same as someone who has done the things to accomplish it. Like, I struggled. I actually wrote a LinkedIn post this morning that took off because I could not find a manufacturer for, it was a story about not finding a manufacturer for 3 years for my first company. And I had a mentor who was in a non-competitive space. It was a CPG company, it was textiles. And I couldn't afford to do it in the US. I tried everything to do it. It just was not realistic. Yeah. And this mentor already had factories in China and said, you know, they vetted me and were like, you know, we want to help. And someone did it for us. And all we ask is that you pay it forward one day. And they literally they wrote down that they would be personally liable if I defaulted on a manufacturing payment. Like, the craziest thing. I'm like, what is wrong with these people? Like, it was just, I am forever grateful for it. But it was okay. People knew that I was specifically seeking out manufacturing at this stage. I had these bare minimums. Like, you have to be so specific to actually put it out in the world. So it might not be instant, but someone somewhere is going to connect the dots for you in the startup world.
Is that one of the things that you've noticed, maybe one of the bigger hurdles, or just something that they don't know because they don't know? When founders come to you, does it just seem like they kind of aren't sure exactly what they want? Or is it just that maybe they're a little bit misguided and kind of all over the place?
I feel like the number one thing is that founders are trying to find a voice of the right, like, what's the right starting point, or what are the actual foundations? Because there is a ton of conflicting advice out there, from YouTube videos to blog posts to programs. And then a lot of these programs will teach you some things after a few weeks and then kick you out and say good luck. Like, there's no continuous support or sometimes an understanding as to why something is the way that it is. So our fundraising program is created in a way that founders are with us until they secure the last dollar of their current round. Wow. So we continuously support them. If they're raising $1 million, we don't drop them until they are fully raised at $1 million. We don't benefit by keeping them in longer, but we're doing everything in our power because there's a difference in conversation from your first, middle, and last check. So there's a lot of gaps, I think, in the system and the way that founders are supported through that, because the reason a lot of these female and underrepresented founders, I think, are failing is due to a lack of resources, network, education, mentors, biases that they don't understand how to work through. So we're trying to be that voice for them. And there's not a one size fits all, like, check all these five boxes and it's going to be absolutely perfect for you. We look for four things in a startup, and it's grittiness, it's coachability, it's transparency and passion. And if they're those four things, the rest doesn't matter as much, because those are the factors that are actually, we think, are going to take them into a successful arena.
Do you guys focus in any specific verticals?
We are technically industry agnostic, but we see mostly tech, health, and CPG. We have a lot of natural CPG networks. I'm on a board of a nonprofit here locally in Dallas. And my partner, Katie, who's in New York, she's an active angel in 19 companies, a mix of CPG and tech. But I do love the natural healthcare side of things. So I would say those are our biggest three. We have a couple in prop tech, but I think like we won't go anywhere in terms of like CBD or even like franchise or manufacturing or real estate. That's not our area of focus, but we do see a lot of really cool companies.
Are there any, let's see, when it comes to getting, so let's say that they've gone through and their slide deck looks great, their pitch deck looks great, everything has been kind of worked through with you guys. Is it also coaching when it comes to how they're interacting with potential investors, like what that looks like, how they carry themselves into the meeting, how to get inside their mind so that they know what that underlying question might really mean?
Yes, 1000%. That is totally a part of our process. And that's actually the first phase before we go through any materials.
Oh, awesome.
The psychological aspect is really important. We like to tell our founders that an investor and your audience, whether you're even going for a grant, a retail, or an investor, they're buying into you before what you do. Because if you pivot or something happens, you're the one who has to do the most right by the money and the opportunity. So they're kind of betting on the horse, especially in the pre-seed and seed stages. And that's like super early. Typically, founders raising between $500,000 and $3 million. There's no perfect box answer for what those stages are right now. Everyone's kind of got their own definition, but that's kind of a high-level standard. So we focus on the psychological piece because if you're not confident in yourself and you can't make that person confident in you, then the meeting is at a loss. And there's so much behind the negotiation piece and understanding that investors are humans too. I think a lot of founders try to word vomit this data and they're so nervous and they're like, they just want to throw everything they can at this investor when investment is also a marriage. When someone is on your cap table, they are on and stuck on your cap table. And is it going to be more expensive to buy them out? So we advise on the strategic relationship side of it too, versus just taking any check. And that's why the psychology behind things is extremely important. And we actually won't even look at a founder's deck. We focus on their pitch script and the order in which they say things first. So for any founder, whether they are building out for, you know, they think they want to talk to investors or they're in the deep stages, we say write out what you want to say. Because that organization and every little word is going to matter. And the deck is a hero. It's not the hero. It's a sidekick. Yeah. It's merely a backup with what you're doing. And it's going to save founders so much time if they can start there before going anywhere else.
So is there anything that maybe they kind of come to the table with that is just kind of common for you guys now where it's like, oh yeah, everybody always thinks that it needs to be done this way when in actuality, we maybe need to kind of shift the way that you focus. Maybe it's even just the way that you guys focus on how their mindset first before you even get to the thing. I feel like a lot of times people want to get straight into their Google sheet and make it creative, make it pretty, as opposed to really focusing on what the ask is or how they can sell themselves first.
Yeah. And well, the thing is too, for founders who want to join our fundraising program, we only accept about 10 to 15% of those who apply. We're not going to just work with all of them. It doesn't matter if, you know, oh, I want to pay for your investor context or, oh, I've already done a DAC 1,000 times. Like that's not the point of the whole program and what the underlying problem is. So as you're saying, it's psychology first. It's the language and order in which someone is saying something. We'll poke holes in their financials, how they're talking about them, their market, their exit strategy. Then the two pieces of material that are really important that we'll help them with is that deck and a one pager. So a lot of founders overcompensate on the pitch deck. Today, I literally reviewed one that was 45 pages long. Poke my eyes out. No one wants to see that. I guarantee you no one's reading it. And this is it's a DocHub or a DocSend stat that on a deck, the average deck gets scanned in less than 2 minutes. So a founder puts all this time into it. They think it's going to be important, even though an investor asked for it. And the reality is that it's just a test. Right. Good luck getting a meeting with them if your deck is 50 pages. I've even seen one that was 68. And this founder said, oh, no, I'm not changing that. I know that it works. And I'm like, well, then why are you talking to me? Go ahead, prove me wrong. But
right.
I'm not passing that out to a single person I know, because I guarantee you they're going to think it's a joke and a waste of time.
Are you eager to dive into the world of podcasting, but not sure where to start? Look no further than How to Create a Podcast in 24 Hours. This dynamic course is your ultimate guide to launching a podcast from scratch in just one day. Learn the ins and outs of podcast creation, from content planning to recording, editing, and promotion. Head over to realdavidezel.com to grab your spot in this transformative course. Unleash your creativity, share your passion, and connect with your audience. Start your podcasting journey today with How to Create a Podcast in 24 Hours.
So it's minimizing that amount of information, and that one pager is actually going to be way more crucial than the deck, because you can conceptualize it a bit easier. It can be opened on a phone. The text is bigger.
Yeah.
It should be bulleted pieces of information. And those are the little things that a lot of founders don't think about. So we focus on these little details too.
Is there a sweet spot when it comes to how long that slide deck, and of course, not everything is the same, but is there kind of a sweet spot where you're like, yeah, this is nice. It's not too much to read, but it's also giving them enough meat on the bone that they understand everything we're asking.
I would say between 10 to 15 slides is realistic. 10 to 12 is ideal. And then around 5 for an appendix.
Yeah.
An appendix is only bonus information of potential questions you're anticipating getting asked about. Whether it's more details on your use of funds, your financial metrics, it is future partnerships, it's an exit strategy, it's comparable exits or future product lines. It could be a ton of different stuff, but I guarantee you that over 20, with all of your appendix slides included that you may not always show, is a no-go for our investors at least.
Yeah. What is the typical amount of time? So say that somebody does get a meeting with a potential investor. Do those kind of vary as well? Like whenever they go and sit with that potential investor, I mean, do they only get 10 minutes, or how does that typically work?
So we say expect a 15-minute meeting. Don't ask for 30. Don't ask for an hour. You can always go longer, but to respect their time, and at least that the first meeting, it should be an intro. It shouldn't be a super hyper formal pitch. It's really trying to get to know them and each other, actually. A lot of founders forget to ask the investor questions and prepare questions.
Yeah.
Truly. And my partner, Katie, will even tell people this. She's like, I'll be on calls for 20 minutes and they haven't asked me a single thing. They're just talking at me. And then she's uninterested, she's not engaged, and she will not write them a check, like guaranteed. If someone isn't going to take the time to get to know her, like I said, it's a marriage. So we want to mentally prepare founders. That first meeting is a really to get to know them. Ask if they want to be formally pitched. Sometimes it's a conversation, and other times, sure, yeah, share the deck. But 15 minutes is a fair average.
And I love that you guys kind of work them through and help them with all of those things so that they're the most prepared they can be, not only from an asset standpoint, like they know that their slide deck it's buttoned up, they've gone through it a million times, but also that they are aware and that it's kind of level set what the expectations are. And like you said, you kind of give them a little bit of insight into what the investor is going to be looking for, how they can use their time the best, how to maneuver those. Because like you said, I feel like if you didn't, only one side that, yeah, they have the great slide deck, but maybe they're expecting it to be 30 minutes when it's really only 10. And they're not asking the right questions, like you said.
Yeah, or they'll never get that call with an investor they really, really want to meet because they're being greedy with time. And they won't share the deck, or they send everything, but they're not prioritizing even a shorter call. Like we always tell the founder, if you can hold off sending some things and just get them on a call to get to know you, it's going to be way more effective than your material.
Wow. Yeah. Do you think that it's just because it's that investor entrepreneur relationship that maybe it innately just kind of feels like there's that barrier, as opposed to going to a networking event full of entrepreneurs where it feels like a lower anxiety rate, maybe a little bit. It's easier to just kind of get to know you. Oh, yeah. What are you doing? Tell me about it. That kind of thing. Do you feel like it's maybe just because they're asking them to kind of get into that, hey, come on, let's fund this and grow this together? Do you feel like it's just that innate anxiety already?
Partially yes to that. And a lot of investor calls are being taken on Zoom. So it's not the same as being in an in-person networking event, picking up on social cues, body language, having a drink or two with them to casually hang out. Like, all those little pieces do matter versus you're seeing the box of someone's head and you're staring into each other's eyes, trying not to, you know, say too much or too little, and you're nervous and you want to get to next steps or share your deck. You prepare all these things. You've got multiple screens up and there's other distractions and you've got a text notification on your computer. Like, all of those pieces do affect a founder and that relationship. Or if you've been busy and you haven't done your research with who you're about to get on the call with, a founder's going to lose out. We also prep them on how much and what type of research should go into someone before you even get on a single call with them, and what that follow-up information is going to look like, and even practicing answers to potential questions and answers, and writing down what you want to ask them, because you're going to get nervous. He'll probably forget. So little things, all of them are going to add up.
Love that. Everything from the before, during, and the after. And I feel like a lot of times the after is where people miss out on opportunity. You know, thank you, no. I mean, there's just so many ways that you can continue to bring value. You can continue to build that relationship, even if it's new, just from after a meeting, because it doesn't just stop once that Zoom call ends. So like I said, I love that you guys are working through that, because I feel like there's just so much that if you haven't been through it, you just don't know. And you're going to hit all those stumbling blocks and you're going to learn from it. But working with, you know, people like you and your team, you can just kind of avoid those stumbling blocks altogether.
Well, and we had one founder, actually a local Texas CPG founder, who was struggling with investment, ends up getting a $100,000 investor check to someone he already knew, because he gets on the call and he's like, he won't respond. We're like, what's conversation been? What do the emails look like? How frequent are they? What was the last thing in your update? How much progress have you made from them? And we pried him on these few questions, and he grew like a $500,000 in sales since he last talked to this person. We said, how about you go ask him out the last time they went out for a beer. You're going to go ask them to go out for a beer and talk about your updates. He got a $100,000 investor check shortly after by prying on these very little things, cultivating the relationship versus this one-sided piece, and also trusting that he could reach out again. And the positioning of it is what helped change that dynamic. Like, that's a part of it too. It's not just, hey, these are the people we know, and that's the only way you're going to be successful. It's a combination of, this is how to utilize your network, your relationships, on top of new ones that we can help with as well.
No doubt. So where do you see Power to Pitch kind of going forward, like from today?
The biggest focus is that we really want to be a part of the solution that raises the 1.6% of venture dollars going to female and underrepresented founders. And we did just launch a grant program, though, to be able to provide more creative options for founders to securing grants, non-dilutive forms, even understanding debt and other accelerators that might benefit them. So we really, really want to help more founders get funded faster. Like, that is the true mission, vision. That is our core. We are going to focus on some more materials within our programs to really grow them and make them more robust, because our fundraising program is so relationship-based. It's application. Founder has to have a validated MVP. They're with us for so long, and we're almost like become a part of their team in a way. So we're always adding resources and tons of value to that, like $500,000 in tech perks alone on top of our introductions and things. So it's getting more founders more money, and we're getting creative in the ways we do it too with these tough market conditions. Yeah. So we're building a relationship with even more investors, which is a benefit to them. So we've got a lot of exciting things in the pipeline, and more free education too for founders who maybe aren't ready in early stage on our LinkedIn and YouTube.
And you guys work with a lot of grants and things in that capacity as well, right?
Yeah. So right now, the updated list of grants, we have 206 opportunities ranging from $1,000 to $250,000 that founders can start applying for right away. So our grant program, that's listed at powertopitch.com. It's not an application. Founders can unlock it right away. But I talk about how I won 22 of 23 grant opportunities. That was six figures in capital alone that I didn't have to pay back. I got a check in the mail. Wow. It was network, PR, marketing, pitch practice. It really helped shape who I am today and the network that I have. And we really want to make that more accessible to more founders, especially for founders who are even pre-revenue and have less than $1 million in capital raised or revenue. That's a real, real good sweet spot for some of those grant opportunities.
Yeah. And I feel like that's a lot of times, you know, it feels maybe overwhelming, you know, to say, oh, I need to go, maybe I can take advantage of a grant or I can apply for a grant. Maybe if you haven't done it before, it does feel overwhelming. So I feel like that's a fantastic resource for entrepreneurs. So I will for sure make sure that that is listed in the show notes so that people can go and check that out too. Random question. So like if you're watching a show like Shark Tank, are you just, when they're pitching, are you like critiquing them as they're doing it? Or is it completely different than how it probably is in real life?
It's funny. So I used to obsess over that show and I actually was almost on two times for my first company before I sold. And I'm actually really glad that I wasn't. I wasn't at the right place or even right capacity to do that. So it ended up working out. Like I was in the, got through the whole application, like had a producer and everything. But
wow,
that's a story for another day. But a lot of that is so unrealistic because founders don't realize that less than 50% actually air. The negotiation doesn't end on that show. You're not actually dealing with the sharks because they have so much going on. Like, look at Mark Cuban, who is sold a part of the Mavericks, has the pharmacy brand on top of his whole deal. Like, you're dealing with his deal team, and they're the ones to make an ultimate decision and still negotiate with you. And if they want biweekly updates or things like that, like, not all of them are as responsive as you might like them to be. Is it huge PR and can benefit and do crazy things for founders? Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a really, really cool thing, but it's more gamified and it doesn't showcase building a relationship right. You're kind of talking at them. You're shooting off firing questions. And I think it's glorified in a lot of the wrong ways. And some founders go on there who shouldn't be giving up equity or they don't have the capacity to fulfill so many orders if they do air. And I know a ton who have run into issues, and we have actually two or three active founders who did deals on Shark Tank still in our program needing support fundraising. Like they're literally in active deals, having great companies. They're over $1 million in revenue, but they're still, they said there are so many of those pieces that we ended up teaching them that they were missing from that show piece because it is so gamified.
Yeah. To me, it's always, I mean, it's of course entertaining, but it always feels to me like the biggest, probably common win for the companies that are on there is just the brand recognition and the brand awareness, you know, that you can just get such a spike in an influx of traffic and people knowing your brand. But that, like you said, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that we never really get to see. And it probably does kind of paint entrepreneurship and capital raising in some negative lights. But this has been fantastic. I can't wait to keep up with you guys, keep up with everything that you're doing. Like I said, I'll make sure to link Power to Pitch, all of those other things. Where can people find you on social or anything else that you guys are doing?
Yeah, so I'm personally super active on LinkedIn at Kat, K-A-T Weaver, W-E-A-V-E-R. And our Instagram at Power to Pitch, YouTube at Power to Pitch, and then powertopitch.com are the best places to find us. We're active on all of them. We are a founder's biggest support system at the end of the day. And then my partner's LinkedIn is Katie Dunn, D-U-N-N. And we'll answer your DMs. Like we're here for founders. You can apply for our program. So appreciate you having us and letting us share a message.
You got it. I appreciate you. And for anybody that is listening in the DFW area, Kat and I mean her team, they're at everything, super involved. So anywhere you go, she will probably be there or will be at the next one. So if you're in the DFW area and you're an entrepreneur looking to grow, looking to take advantage of everything Power to Pitch has, get out, go find her. She's everywhere and team is awesome. Thank you so much again for your time. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate the kind words, David. Thanks so much. Appreciate that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of How to Ride a Roller Coaster. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing, leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform, and connecting on social. You can subscribe and follow on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Real David Ezell. To learn more about being a guest on the show, go to realdavidezell.com to find out more. Until next time.